WTF is Retail, presented by Knotted Commerce, the integration specialists for growing retail brands. Welcome back to WTF is Retail podcast. We're recording a very special episode with Sam Mattingly, the co-founder of Batch London. How are you doing?
Very good, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for letting us into your store today. Lovely little space downstairs, perfect for recording a podcast. Have you ever done podcasts in here before?
One.
How was it?
One down here. Yeah, it was good.
Not a disaster. Hopefully not like today.
No, hopefully they never are.
Oh, nice one. We've got Tom Brewer on his little debut. You a bit nervous, Tom?
I'm very excited. Been looking forward to this the last few weeks. Really excited to be here.
Awesome. So I always like to start the podcast a bit with the story of how it was founded. Where did the idea come from for Batch London? I'm sure you've said this a million times, but it'd be great to hear it.
Yeah, absolutely. So pretty simple, really. Started Batch because I couldn't find a decent casual suit. That was the initial premise. Realised that the timing of the casual suit was great. The way that we dressed to work had changed significantly, going from this very formal in the office 5 days a week to a lot more hybrid in and out of the office. The workplace had casualised as a result of that. But I guess also post-COVID, there's this transition towards wanting to look a bit sharper and smarter as we got released out into pubs and bars and clubs again. So wanted to create something that you could dress up to look smart as easily as you could dress down to look casual.
Nice.
Something you could wear with all the items of clothing in your wardrobe already and sort of have that piece that transitions you from day to night that answers that question, the conundrum that we all have of what to wear when you want to look good, which is sort of a daily struggle for most people, definitely myself. So it's nice to know that you've got a go-to outfit that you can throw on for anything and you're going to look the part.
Yeah.
And then you naturally start looking into the fashion industry in a bit more detail and quickly it reveals what an unsustainable mess it is.
Yeah.
And I think we all know fast fashion's bad, but it's not until you really look into it that you get a true understanding of the depth of how severe it's got and how severe fast fashion is. And we're at a point now where 6 in 10 items of clothing that are made end up in landfill within a year, which is obviously a pretty mental stat. So wanted to work out why we could change that, but also wanted to work out why I had no sort of need or want or understanding of why the fashion industry is so bad prior to looking into it.
Yeah.
So that led us to this sort of made to order model, which is where Batch comes from, where the name comes from, etc.
Awesome. And what's you're repping a Batch suit right now?
Yes.
Which one is it?
This is a bottle green linen from our Batch 5 collection, our spring summer range, which got released on the 1st of May. So
we will go into that a little bit later in more detail. So not to give too much away too early. But yeah, looks absolutely banging. Yeah.
Thank you, mate.
So in terms of standout, obviously you've made this business, there's three of you now, right?
Yeah.
In terms of, there must have been some challenges when you first started out, you know, in those first few weeks to where you are now. Is there any standout challenges that you guys kind of had to overcome, things you had to learn on the go, and stuff like that?
I think that's the nature of startups. I was lucky that I came from the startup world. I was working in the drinks industry before.
Okay.
So I spent 5 years as head of ops of a drink startup, joined as it launched.
Yeah.
And the sort of only consistent thing that you can be guaranteed will happen during a startup is things will go wrong all the time. So sort of it's understanding that. It's the biggest challenge is like accepting that and then working out how to stay calm and get over all of those challenges because they can just come thick and fast.
Yeah.
I guess some sort of standout challenges for us. We had a whole, we were manufacturing slightly differently at the start. We're doing what's called garment dyed, which is where you take a plain fabric, you make it into a garment, and then you dye it in a big washing machine to give it its colour.
Right.
We're now doing it slightly differently where you dye the fabric first and then you make it into a garment and it's finished. But when you're doing it the first way around, when you put it into this big washing machine, the fabric shrinks. So it's a very clever process. You test how much shrinkage the fabric's got, and then you add in that extra amount into each garment so it shrinks to exactly the right size. The problem is we had a sort of unheard of in the industry issue where there was an inconsistency across different rolls of fabric. So a whole run of fabric should have the same shrinkage.
Mm-hmm.
We had different rolls which had different shrinkage within each roll.
Mm-hmm.
So a big proportion of our suits came back slightly the wrong size, some too big, some too small. So you had this range of garments that didn't fit properly.
Right.
So we then had them remade, and then it turned out there was different shrinkage within the same roll, so had the same problem again. Just caused us this big issue, but we were lucky that it was quite early in our journey. We were able to fight the fires and do the customer service that you need to get through those issues. So we did, and it was a big learning curve to sort of move away from that. But, yeah, you know, the in answer to your question, there are thousands of challenges. Right. It's sort of a daily pressure, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And were you, that process, were you getting that done in the UK? Were you getting it done abroad? Or
we were made in Porto at that time. Well, no, just outside of Porto in Portugal.
Okay. How did you find that in Porto, by the way? It's a bit.
How did we find making that? How did I find the factory?
Yeah, the factory. Like, why? How Porto, basically?
Well, just because I wanted to stay true to the sort of sustainability goals, air miles, etc. Didn't want to manufacture in the sort of big four, the Turkey, the China, the Pakistan, the India. And I'd just seen lots of well-made clothes with labels in them that said made in Portugal. So found a directory on Google of 700 different factories that make jackets in Portugal, and just started going through the list until we came across actually two that we liked the look of. Went to go and visit both, and one was amazing and one was a shit show.
And in terms of like, from a tech perspective, I'm talking like your online store, maybe you've got a point of sale solution, things like that. Did you have any idea about these solutions at the beginning, or did you have to learn on the go, you know, which solutions to pick or what you actually needed to fulfill the, you know, this process of selling, you know, clothes?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you probably know the answer to that already, because that's your expertise, and you still learn on the go because new things get released on a daily basis, right? So it's very much a trial and error, and I think it's like you'll come across two different applications that do a very similar thing. And you can spend hours sort of banging your head against the wall working out which one's best, and actually in reality there's going to be such a minuscule effect on the overall business that it's like, just do one of them, implement it, and then if it's not working, change it. But often people get stuck not implementing stuff because they're waiting for the perfect thing, and actually it's like, just start, because the best way to learn is to be doing stuff. You can't get any feedback if you're not operating right. So I think the best piece of tech that we use though is Shopify by far.
Is it Shopify Plus or just Shopify?
Just Shopify.
Okay.
But it's an like unbelievably elite platform.
Yeah, for sure.
How long have you been online before you bought the shop, or opened the shop?
About 6 months, which is fairly unheard of. Yeah,
that's quick. Yeah.
Very quick.
Okay. I mean, that segues nicely into this whole omni-channel selling thing. Obviously we're in the Spitalfields branch. How important is that omni-channel, having a retail, a physical retail presence, how important is that for your brand?
Absolutely essential.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think more and more so that's becoming the case. Consumers want more than just an online shop. The retail, the high street starting to come back into action as people are sick of, if we talk about fashion specifically, but it actually works across the board. But specifically in fashion, people are getting quite sick of like buying clothes that don't fit, sending them back. The whole thing just becomes a process. More often than not, people forget or can't be asked to send something back. They're making, businesses are making it more difficult to send stuff back. To try and counteract this sort of idea of like, oh, buy the same item in three different sizes, keep one, send the rest back, it's obviously terrible for the business's perspective, because bad for cash flow, but you've also then got to repackage and reprocess stuff before you can resell it. Again, like, we can go into that in so much detail. I could talk about it for hours. But in short, I think consumers are now thirsting for more than just an online presence. The online gives you the ease to access to buy something that you've come across in person, particularly for what we're selling, where, you know, it's a slightly higher ticket item. It's something that you might want to sort of try, feel, touch before you go on to purchase it, etc. So it's given us the facility to meet our customers face to face and start to build that sense of community.
Yeah.
There's no brand without community these days.
I've seen the sign right here, Batch Members Club.
The Batch Members Club, yeah, that's what we call it.
Quality.
So by opening the store 6 months after being online, was that because it was a challenge? You found like returns were quite high, so having a store was...
No, we've actually, I mean, our returns rate's always been super, super low. Currently sitting at 0.3%. Which again, for clothing is pretty large. Pretty massive to have such a small returns rate. But no, sort of the main inspiration, we did a launch party when we released our first collection. And it became very clear like how much we liked communicating with our, or engaging with our community is a better way of putting it. How important it was for people to be able to try and see and touch the product before they went on to buy it. Something again that you're waiting, well, for us, you wait 4 to 8 weeks for it to be made. This is the made to order model. You buy it, you wait 4 to 8 weeks. In return, you get a much, much higher quality item for a lot less, and you get to save the planet at the same time. So it's reinstilling this idea that patience is a virtue, but you have to trust the business to buy into that, right? You've got to know that you're going to get what you receive. So you're going to receive what you bought. And in order to make that work, here he comes.
Here he is, the star of the show.
The star of the show. Go on then, in you go. And in order for people to buy into that, you need to trust the business that you're purchasing from. So having a physical store allows us to build brand trust from meeting people face to face. But even when you look at the e-commerce piece, someone knows where they're going to come knocking if their suit doesn't arrive. It's not just like, this could easily be a scam. And it's not like, again, buy something, you don't know whether it's going to fit or not. You have to wait 8 weeks before you send it back. You can come and try it, find the right size, know that when it arrives, it's going to be right and you're ready to go.
I suppose that fits nicely into kind of what you guys are all about as well, like good quality, offering a good service. You know, to have a physical place with that security where they can come in, see the quality of the products and all that, it kind of just ties in nicely. It makes sense to me.
Big time.
Yeah. Are you, Tommy, are you going to ask any questions today?
Sorry, mate. You've covered them on.
It's not a good debut, is it?
Back over to you.
No, all right, I'll do it. How do your online and kind of physical sales compare?
We're about 66% on in-store, 33% online.
Okay.
In order for the business to scale long term, that is, those numbers need to invert.
Right.
But we're coming up to our second birthday. For us right now, there's such a huge catchment area in London and even catchment area within the area of London that we're in, that our goal has always been to make destination stores that you want to come and visit, that you make a day out of coming to see, make the store good enough that people have to come there and the rest falls into place. So for the time being, it works really nicely. We've got a really good relationship with, you know, most of our customers, even a lot of those that buy online have been into store at some point. Gives us a facility to run events, to draw lots of new eyes into brands.
That's actually, that's a good point I hadn't even really thought of. Do you, what percentage of people are UK customers? Do you sell into Europe and other places or?
Yeah, we sell fully internationally, but
okay.
It's like 95% UK, which is what you'd expect.
Yeah.
To be honest, at the moment, it's like, focus your energy in one place, focus your funds in one place, and then right. worry about the wider scale piece after that. I think that so many brands get carried away with trying to expand beyond their current product range and their current location because it seems that like you're fighting an uphill battle at times without realizing that you're fighting the same uphill battle wherever you go. And actually there's so much more of that area to go and grab a hold of that's within your control, that's within your space. You know, product line's such an interesting one. People get bored of their own products internally and forget that such a small fraction of the world's population has even seen it, let alone heard of you.
Yeah. And obviously, you have got this omnichannel thing, as we've talked about 50 times by now. But like, are you, what's a bigger cost for you, having this physical presence? Or like, I'm presuming you invest money into your online presence as well to get seen. What's cost you more? And in terms of return on investment, which are you seeing better results in?
It's quite hard to quantify that and measure those
yeah.
numbers and statistics because like, having a physical store might mean that, so they say you have to see a brand 6 times before you go on to buy it. And the first 3 times are subconscious. So you won't even notice that you've seen it. But then suddenly it's like, I'm sure you guys have done this. And if you haven't, I'd recommend doing it. Walk down the same street and like each time you walk down it, you'll see something new, even if you're really looking out for it. Which is, I kind of picked this up when I was doing field sales in the drinks world. And you know, you're like deliberately looking out for specific venues with your eyes on that will stock this certain drink, right?
Yeah.
But you can walk down the same street 3 or 4 times and each time you'll see a new one that you didn't spot the time before. And that's not just opened up. It's just there's so much capacity that your brain has to take something in.
Yeah.
And more often than not, it's because you've subconsciously seen it 2-3 times and then suddenly it like pops up in your vision. And it's the same in this sort of any brand world. So going back to the original point, original question, having a physical store might mean that someone walks past on the street, picks up the brand, then they get hit by an ad, then they then come across it in a, you know, PR journal, and that's the point that they see it and then they go on to buy it. So you can't look at it like when you've been around for longer and you're a bit further down the line in business, you can start to split out those categories and work out which spending has the biggest impact. When it's this stage, it has to be like 9 times out of 10 gut feel. And just talking to people. Where did you hear about it? Where did you come across it? You try and measure across those things and work out like, should we invest more in physical retail? Should we invest more in e-commerce? Or should we invest more in community or whatever your routes to market or your sales channels are? It's quite hard to quantify that return on investment. You have to use gut feel and common sense, really, and probably easier to look at like what's converting and then work out how to increase that conversion before you do anything else.
Yeah, okay. That was a pretty horrible question to give you there, wasn't it, really? But yeah, quality. And just going on to kind of, I went on your website and I think I saw a video talking about subconsciously seeing things. I think I saw a video on LinkedIn or something about you. I think you were talking about the blend, specific blend that you guys created for your garments.
Yeah.
Could you tell us a bit about that? How did you come across that blend, or what's unique about it? I don't know anything about really clothing manufacturing, so it'll be interesting to hear it.
Yeah. So our first material was a cotton, mm-hmm. and a cotton and elastane blend. And it's quite an interesting conundrum. If you add elastane to a garment, it makes it much more difficult to recycle because they have to strip the elastane from the cotton before they can recycle it. Mm. So if you look at that from a sustainability perspective, and I think a lot of brands get caught up on this, it's like, okay, so if you're making something harder to recycle, does that make it less sustainable? But like, if you look at it from more of a totalitarian perspective, why are we making clothes to be recycled? Why are we make clothes that last longer? Mm. And if you wear a garment for I think it's on average 6 months or 9 months longer, on average, it reduces its water and carbon emissions by 40% just wearing something for another 9 months, which is obviously like crazy stat. So if you make clothes that last for longer, mm-hmm. that you can wear more, that you wear more because they're more comfortable, mm-hmm. adding elastane does that, then suddenly your net impact is reduced massively versus can you recycle something? Mm. So that's originally when we started out, found this amazing material. The elastane made such a huge impact. Then coming into this new collection, releasing the linens, which is the video that you're referencing.
Is it? Yeah, okay.
Wanted to have elastane in it because it makes it more comfortable. But before doing that, did some market research, asked people what their issues were with linen on the market at the moment. A lot of people say that it's quite scratchy out the box. Mm. A lot of people say that it rips easily and it doesn't wear well. And that it creases too easily. And so sort of three core problems. So wanted to find a material blend that alleviated all of those issues. Mm-hmm. So we went for a linen, cotton and elastane blend. 64% linen, 34% cotton, 2% elastane.
Okay.
So the cotton and the elastane make it more comfortable out the box, less scratchy, but they also mean that it's much more comfortable. It's not going to rip. You're not going to go to, you know, start dropping at a wedding and suddenly you've, you know, ripped the seam, which happens on a regular basis. Yeah.
I think you need one of these suits. Yeah. That's actually our go-to.
I've got a wedding coming up. I've seen you've been on top of the social media game, and I've seen that you've been working quite closely with a lot of celebrities.
Yeah.
Is that a conscious decision you made at the time to work with influencers?
Big time.
Yeah.
You know, it's the way that you build a brand. It's the way that you add value into an item of clothing. Like, our goal has always been for it to mean more when you put something on. Yeah. So like, who do you become when you wear it? In order to do that, you need to add some context to that item, and influencers do a really good job of that, of, you know, building this lifestyle behind the brand. But when we designed it, that wasn't the sort of like design ethos. How can we make something that influencers will want? Mm-hmm. It just turned out that we managed to find the garment at the right time that people want to wear on stage, on the red carpet, on the, you know, on TV, etc. Mm-hmm. So that when we do reach out to influencers and we invite them in for a free suit fitting, again, feeds back to this physical retail store being essential to us. It's a much easier thing to say yes to if it's something that you know that you can see, and you know that you want it and see how you'd wear it, and then someone invites you in for a free fitting. Mm. You know, who says no to a free suit fitting?
Are you doing that personally? Like, you know, DMing them, yeah. And is the response positive?
Most response rate's pretty high, but we were also a numbers game.
Yeah. That's really cool. So some of the names you've had in recently? You've had the guy from Top Boy, was it?
Yeah, we had Ashley Waters come in the other day, which was really rewarding because he loved it so much that he bought the whole collection and the whole previous collection.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So, yeah, it's really, really cool when that happens. It happens quite regularly when an invited influencer in for a free suit. And again, they love it so much that they buy more than one, which is a real sort of good thumbs up for the garment and where this whole idea of making to order and really comes, you know, full circle and back to fruition, is that it's like the quality is so much higher than the cost would lay on, because we're not having to account for wastage and holding stock and all the other bits of margin leakage that you get, that it's a high enough quality for, you know, your Ashley Waters to want to have six suits and two shirts and wear on stage, etc., but at a price point which is attainable to most people. Mm-hmm. And like, don't get me wrong, it's quite a big one-off purchase. So our linen suits retail at 450 and the cotton suits at 395. But that's not something that, you know, most people couldn't save up to purchase if they wanted to. You don't have to buy loads of them because they last for ages. You can wear them in loads of different ways. But equally, you're getting what should cost a lot more for a lot less. So in terms of your quality and quality of material and manufacture, etc.
Interesting. And do you hold much stock here in this space?
Oh, no, only samples. So samples to try on for people to find their right fit, their right colour. There's nothing that we sell that you can walk out the shop with.
And your suits, are they made in London, in the UK? Yeah,
yeah, they're made in London, yeah.
Okay.
So you fulfil from the UK?
Yeah, they're handmade in London.
Oh, wow.
All the materials are from Italy. The Italians make the best materials. They're not very easy to work with, but they don't have to be because they make the best stuff.
Nice. And I suppose that leads us nicely on to Batch 05. 05, is that how you say it?
Batch 05.
Yep. Just tell us a little bit about this new kind of collection.
Yeah, it's just our spring-summer collection. And we used to operate that we'd drop 3 or 4 times a year, and you had a limited window to buy into it. And we've now changed that to a spring, summer, and an autumn, winter, which is much more in line with sort of the rest of the fashion world. And you have 6 months to buy into the collection, and your items will arrive 4 to 8 weeks later at any point during the year. But yeah, this is our new spring and summer collection. It's the first time we've ventured away from cotton and into linens, which is really exciting. Sort of licking my lips looking at how many crap linen suits there are on the market at the moment. And knowing that we can sort of massively beat the competition from that perspective. And also our first foray into linen shirts. Okay. So we've got 2 shirt and trouser combos, one in black and one in off-white. So just a nice fitted linen shirt that comes with a matching pair of trousers if you'd like it. 2 linen suits, one in cream and one in bottle green, which I'm wearing. And then 2 cotton suits, one in Pacific blue and one in stone grey.
Nice. And do you guys do shorts at all, or is it just trousers?
Just trousers.
Are you ever going to adventure?
Yeah, we probably will at some point. The long-term vision is to be the go-to made-to-order brand in the world.
Okay.
In that smart casual space, so we'll own that smart casual realm.
Yeah.
Again, smart casual is just a really interesting sort of dress code because nobody knows how to dress for it. Some people see that as smarter than others, and some people see that as more casual than others. But it allows us to play in that versatility space of something you could be smart and could be casual in. So you buy one suit and you've got just the trousers, just a jacket, smart outfit, a casual outfit, and a smart casual outfit. And, you know, from 2 items, you've got at least 5 different outfits.
Sorted.
You start styling them different ways. The options are sort of infinite.
Okay. And in terms of, like, upcoming plans, let's say in the next year, 2 years, What's kind of on the roadmap for you guys? Are you thinking, you know, are you looking to expand more into different kind of markets? Are you new kind of product ranges? What do you guys want to do in the next year or so?
In the next year or so, we're looking to move shop. So can't give you any details on that yet because we haven't got any further down the line. But aiming for somewhere more in central London, put an offer in, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But to create a bigger retail space, it's 70% conversion rate. People that try on a suit go on to buy it. So simple maths, you get more people to try on suits, you sell more of them. So aim for somewhere with higher footfall, then release some new products. So we've just done shirts, but we're looking at overcoats for the winter, maybe a dog jacket to match the overcoat, and just expand that product range, new materials, etc. And then continue to grow from there. That's sort of the next year, and then beyond that, we'll look to expand geographically within the UK and further afield.
Okay. And I probably should have asked this earlier. In terms of, do you get many purchases through your social media channels? Like, do you have Instagram, obviously, but TikTok, do you use TikTok or anything like that?
We use TikTok, but again, for what we're selling, it's not really a sort of impulse purchase. Mm. It's much more of a considered purchase. So We're still discovering it now, but our sales cycle is somewhere more like 6 to 18 months than it is like a few seconds, which is where a lot of these brands thrive from this. Like, let's spend loads of money on paid social and let's only look at our ROAS. And that's what our measurement's on, whereas we don't really operate like that. We're like, how much, we'd take it as much more of an omnichannel and a full circle approach. Like the work that we're probably our highest converting channel is LinkedIn.
Okay.
But all 3 of us have quite good personal brands and we've made real effort to do that. And so, you know, the LinkedIn might be the awareness channel to drive someone to land on the website. The website's got to be in good nick for someone to be able to get the right information. They then might sit in our pixel that they get hit with an Instagram ad in. But you have to look at it as a full circle. We're not measuring ROAS, we're measuring sales versus total spend.
Yeah, it's interesting that you get a lot of customers from LinkedIn. I never would have really thought that. But I suppose your target audience, kind of people, on business people, want to look smart, casual, kind of makes sense, really.
Yeah.
So, anything from your side, Tom? You want to jump in on that? No.
Sorry, no. Sorry, looking there. Sorry.
Why am I here?
Terrible input so far. So this podcast is sponsored by Knotted Commerce, which is an integration agency. Wearing that hat, I'm always interested to hear actually about the tech stack you have behind the scenes. So you have mentioned about Shopify Advance, Shopify POS in store. Is there anything else in the tech stack that you found to be helping the business expand?
Not really. We're still relatively early days in our journey, to be honest, and look to try and keep the tech stack quite small because you can get carried away pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So in the short term, we've sort of realized that we've got this massively high converting channel in the physical retail, and our online conversion's really low in comparison. So I think we're sitting at like a 0.4 or 5% conversion rate on the website. Mm-hmm. So, you know, ideally you want to get that into single digits, 2, 3, 4, 5%. However, there's so many different things that you can spend your money on.
Yeah.
And actually, like, a pretty easy way to get yourself, your brand to convert more online is to grow consumer trust. We've decided we're going to double down on physical retail. Mm-hmm. Input most of our you know, marketing spend into driving people to the shop. Mm-hmm. Whether that's through paid ads, whether that's to book in for a fitting or whatever. And then over time, we'll increase our conversion rate online. And I think the other thing like that we've recently become aware of is if you try and change everything at once, you don't know what's worked.
Yeah.
And that's like, you know, we've just coming out the back of a fundraise. This is the time to start spending money.
Mm-hmm.
However, like, you need to do it in stages. Is it that our website conversion rate optimization isn't up to scratch? Or is it that we're not driving enough traffic?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got to do it in stages. Or is it not the right type of traffic? Or do we need to do more A and B and testing about the UX of the website or whatever it is? But there's so many different channels that we're just going to do it slowly. Take advantage of the fact that we've got this highly converting channel in store. And then work out where we want to keep doubling down, where we'll build the tech stack, whether we want to do more in, I don't know, getting people to repurchase based on retention and loyalty tech pieces or, whatever it might be.
Is there a retail brand you want to sort of emulate? Sort of look from afar and go, they're doing it right, sustainable,
Doing the right steps? I think the brands that I emulate are brands that have built good communities rather than like, you know, they've got the best website. That being said, Grindwood's site is amazing,
right?
As you'd imagine,
They're
smashing it as a business. But yeah, for us, the brands that I look at are brands that have built a good community, because that's, in my opinion, what will build a brand that stands the test of time. And we're not really here for like a quick win.
Mm. And what are you guys doing like to build that community? Do you host kind of events or?
Yeah, we host lots of events.
Yeah.
We just did our first exclusive batch members party.
Cool.
Where you could only get access if you bought a suit.
Okay.
Or you're a plus one of someone that had bought a suit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like rewarding people that have bought into the community.
Mm-hmm.
Our new shop, when we get it, will be called the Batch Members Club. Look to host regular events. Some of them will be open to the public. Some of them will be exclusive.
Yeah.
There's longer term vision beyond that to take it further. We're currently putting NFC pucks in all of our garments. So
You've
got a little chip that you can scan and that will take you to a certain page on the website, which will be your garment passport. And we haven't actually managed to get it working yet. But that's the process. First thing is to get it in the garments, so we're doing that. But when that does happen, we can start to look at building loyalty screens across brands. And, you know, you buy a suit and become part of the Batch Members Club and you'll get X, Y, Z discount off a brand that fits within our lifestyle.
Have you considered, I'm sure you have considered, but like, have you thought about doing pop-ups in different cities to kind of get, you know, people in locals?
100%. But again, it comes down to, like, capacity.
Mm.
Both like mental, physical and financial. So we're a team of three at the moment, looking to grow as it is. But again, it's like we could go into a pop-up in another city, but right now we've got a base here. There's so many more people that won't have even heard of us that would be very much our target market and potential customer. You know, I think you forget that I certainly forget the population of London's and the many millions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So at some point, it would make sense to go and do a little road show and road tour, yeah. But not yet.
Do you have peak trading? You sort of this time of year, summer, or is it very much the same?
Yeah, we do. It's like kind of in line with back to school at the moment. So like post Christmas, post summer. But again, we're doing stuff to this. So like last summer for us was really, really slow. Partly because of the weather, right? It's like little things you don't think about, but when it's hot and sunny, you've got far more things to go and spend your money on and time on, like then go shopping for suits. It's like, well, actually at the pub or whatever it might be. So we've introduced the linen collection and linen shirts and stuff to alleviate some of that cyclicality. And yeah, we're still learning what that is. But yeah, there is to a certain degree.
Cool. So I guess to wrap it up, what I always like to ask at the end of the podcast is, what is your favourite brand at the minute for you?
You put me on the spot there.
Yeah. This normally happens.
I don't know. That would be a difficult question to answer. I like what the Pure Spot guys are doing. I think they've built a really good brand and community and they're hustling pretty hard.
Awesome. All right. Well, I guess that's pretty much it. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Telling us about the journey, some of the challenges. I'm sure that any kind of retail brand or e-commerce brand listening will probably take a lot from that and the things you're saying. And sum it up, hosted by Not E-commerce Integration Agency. If you want to find out more about our services and what we do, you can go to noticommerce.com. Cheers.
Nice one. Thanks, guys.